Welcome to Success Stories, brought to you by SNS Activewear. I'm your host, Marshall Atkinson, and this is the podcast that focuses on what's working so you can have success too.
There could be a few twists and turns on the road to success. On today's Success Stories podcast, we'll chat with Jeremy Parker with Swag Space, who has dreamed up, developed, sold, and started over a few times with his businesses. How do you launch a company, get sales, hire the best people, learn from your mistakes? Jeremy will guide us through those questions and more based on his career on this episode of Success Stories. This is one you're going to want to listen to probably a second time. So grab a cup of coffee and get ready to take some killer notes, because Jeremy's going to tell all on this edition of the show. So Jeremy, welcome to the Success Stories podcast.
Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And you've helped out with Shirt Lab a little bit. And I've kind of been following what you've been doing in the promo space for a while. And you're all about big ideas and going. You're like a million miles an hour with your hair on fire all day.
Somewhat. Yeah, seeing opportunities and making sure we attack it full force and with confidence, but being open-minded to change opinions and learn as we go.
Yeah, great, great. All right, so let's start off and just take us back to the early days, right? So sure. I've always, you know, appreciated about you is that, you know, you're pretty much always been an entrepreneur, right? So take us back to the halcyon days, the early days, and how you got started and how those lessons of things not working led to your success that you're having now.
Sure thing. Yeah. So I actually was a documentary filmmaker in college. I went to Boston University. And during film school, I made this film called 1%. It was an award-winning documentary film. And we were in Vail, Colorado, one of the largest film festivals. And I'm on the top of the mountain. And I looked down and basically in this like, quote-unquote celebrity brunch that they had after the award show, half the room were these major actors and people you've all heard of. And half the room were more struggling artists. And I asked myself two questions. Number one, do I love what I'm doing? And number two, am I that good at it? And both answers were no. It was like this realization right in front of me that maybe filmmaking was not the best path. So finished up college. I graduated. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I started my first company. I thought that, you know, creating a film, it's you're an entrepreneur. You're creating something out of nothing. And I didn't really know what I was good at or what I liked or didn't like. But I started a t-shirt company. That was the first thing I could think of. And I thought, how hard could it be to start a t-shirt company?
How hard can it be? Famous last word.
Exactly. But I figured that the worst case, let's say this t-shirt failed, which it ultimately did. I don't want to spoil it. But basically, I thought I would learn how to do manufacturing and PR and how to build a website and how to do, you know, all the different things. I would figure out what I was actually good at and what I enjoyed to do. So I started this t-shirt company called Tees and Tats. Horrible name. I got better at branding as the years went on. But we started this t-shirt company. It was high-end $250, $300 t-shirts. Every t-shirt was limited edition, numbered, and we were selling, and we were actually really doing well. This is in 2007. We were selling to all these like high-end boutiques. Now, if I could take your audience back to 2007, this was the recession. Bear Stearns was going under, Lehman Brothers, all these banks. And we came up with a market-relating pricing model, because obviously no one's buying high-end t-shirts when they're losing all their money in the stock market. And all the stores we were selling to were like going under. We tied the prices of our t-shirts to the price of the Dow Jones. So for every 100 points the Dow dropped, we would give people a discount on their t-shirt price. It was a little cute. I was 22 years old at the time. And I wrote this to Mark Cuban. Now, Mark Cuban, as I was becoming this young entrepreneur and trying to learn what I was good at and bad at, he had a blog called Blog Maverick. And I wrote to Mark Cuban, and Mark Cuban, legitimately, I can't even make this up, within 10 minutes, responded to me, said, I love the story. Do you mind if I post it on my blog? I said, go for it. And he wrote this whole blog post about me, about entrepreneurial spirit and how during these tough times, this is where the world's going to be, you know, how America's going to be saved type of thing. And that article got picked up by a lot of different readers and ultimately got on the eyeballs of a writer from Ad Age. And Ad Age is a big marketing magazine, and they wrote about me. So I got this kind of my first wave of PR and press, and it was a really cool thing. And that ultimately led me to meet Elliot Pizer from MV Sport. And MV Sport is a very large player in the promotional product space, and they're a supplier, but part of their business is very big into colleges and their college apparel at the different bookstores. And I ultimately met Elliot and we hit it off. And, you know, I used to go to his office. I remember this in Bryant Park in New York City frequently, like literally like not like 10, 15, 20 times. And we met and we brainstormed ideas. And I liked learning about him and seeing like what you could ultimately build in this apparel space. And I think he liked me because I don't know, I can't speak for him, but I think he probably saw something of me in him when I was much younger. And ultimately he said to me, Jeremy, I want you to start a business and it could be under our label and I'll fund it type of thing. So I ended up starting a business underneath the MV Sport umbrella called Vote for Art. And this, the idea was very simple. I was 23 at the time. What if you could partner up with different college campuses and you could partner up with the licensing department as well as the bookstore? And then you could do a graphic design contest where all these students would reimagine University of Maryland logo or University of Tennessee or all these different kinds of things. And then people would vote on the best design and the winning design would sell on a t-shirt in the bookstore, the basketball stadium, the football stadium. So basically making college apparel a little bit cooler. And we ended up launching this at, I can't remember the exact number, 30, 50, I'm at a lot of schools all throughout the country. And we ended up partnering up with like Lakewood Blue Claws, minor league baseball teams, film festivals and music festivals. And we used to become like this contest for all these upcoming events to have their like official, you know, film festival t-shirt, if you will. I ended up doing that for 3 years. It never took off as big as it needed to get. And frankly, I wasn't an equity holder. I was like an entrepreneur, but I was more of an employee. And I left that when I was about 25 years old to join my brother. And my brother was doing something really, really interesting. And I thought this was just an amazing idea. He basically ran this company called Tadcast, where he partnered up with these YouTube stars. And all these YouTube stars were making no money back in the day. This is what, 13, 14 years ago. Making no money, getting millions of views. And his idea was very simple. Why don't we get the biggest name brands into the YouTube videos? Like get State Farm and Colgate. Like all these companies are doing product placement in movies. They're doing product placement in like American Idol and the judges are drinking a Coke can. Why can't you get those same brands into the YouTube stars video and get them a lot of eyeballs, but also allow the YouTube star to make a lot of money? Now, today this seems like, it's such an obvious thing, right? Every Instagram post is sponsored. Every Twitter post is sponsored. 15, 14 years ago, it wasn't. And he was just getting started. And I felt like this would be a great business. So I joined my brother and we started brokering deals for State Farm, Colgate, Verizon, Wonderful Pistachios into these YouTube stars video and making them a lot of money. It was like the complete Wild West before people knew that like oil was valuable. Like we were getting in. And then the idea kind of expanded and we said, well, why are we just stopping with these YouTube stars? Why are we going after all the major celebrities, the guys who, you know, have A-list stars, the movie stars, the big rappers? Like, why don't we go after all these big stars and try to own the rights to their celebrity kind of presence on Twitter and Facebook, right? This is still very, very early. So I can't get out names, but imagine there was a rock star, theoretically, who had 2,000 followers on Twitter, right? Twitter was relatively new. We would go up to the celebrity and buy his rights. Like, we would own the rights to his Twitter feed. That basically he was not able to promote deals through Twitter unless it went through us. And the celebrity didn't really care about that because Twitter was like a nothing platform at the time. And it was like, he was just getting free money in his mind. He didn't see the big picture of what we saw that Twitter could become. And we started buying up all the rights to like guys who now, you know, the 2,000 followers back then, they have 40 million followers now because it caught up and we were owning all these rights and all these athletes and musicians and pop stars. It was crazy. That company ultimately got acquired by a publicly traded company when I was 25 years old. This big company basically saw what we were doing, heard that we were talking to all these major celebrities, buying the rights, and they wanted a piece of it. So literally from the moment we started that business to the exit, it was about 7 months. It was the quickest, like I've never heard of anything like it, where we start a business and we sell it for like millions of dollars. And I was 25 years old at this point. After that, I started another business called Vouch. It was a social networking app based on your favorite things. The idea, I think, is still amazing. I still think it's good, but it ultimately failed because I don't think I was the right entrepreneur to build it. You know, there's a lot of lessons. We could get into those lessons of why I failed and why I believe I failed. But high-level idea, imagine you could vouch for your favorite things and your friends could follow you and see what you recommend. And if you're the friend that is the go-to friend for books or movies, they follow you for those recommendations. And it becomes this ultimate recommendation platform. You know, like Facebook is such a big platform and everyone's taking a bit and piece of Facebook and making a dedicated experience around it. Instagram took the pictures and Twitter took the status update, and we wanted to take the like button because we felt like the like button was the most monetizable aspect of Facebook. And if you can make it cool and fun, that would be a great thing. I spent about 3 years doing that, raised millions of dollars, and ultimately had to shut it down. So, most entrepreneurs who have failures, they always chalk it up to a learning experience. And there was a lot of learning in here, but obviously we wish we succeeded. So that was that. And then right after that, I started swag.com. So this is 2016. Swag.com, I had this experience from my MB sport days, doing promotional products and college apparel. And I just saw the industry getting bigger and bigger and bigger over the last 10 years before I started. But the buyer was changing. And this was like the key insight. The buyer is getting younger and younger. And I figured, why isn't there a platform that appeals to today's buyer, like the 22-year-old, the 23-year-old? So I just went all in and like dove deep in who this current buyer is. And I thought it would be the marketing teams. It ended up being the office manager. So I learned different things, and maybe my initial inclination was not right, but ultimately we got to the right thing. And we just started learning the industry as much as I can and getting back into the swing of things. And swag.com became the fastest growing company in the promotional product space. We went from 350,000 or so the first year to the sixth year doing over $30 million a year. In 2021, we were acquired by Custom Inc. And I've been the CEO of swag.com for the last 2 years up until last December. So a couple months ago, I left the role of CEO and I started a new division called Swag Space. And I'm just so excited about what Swag Space is. And Marshall, you want me to give the rundown of what Swag Space is right now?
Let's do this. Give us the rundown of what Swag Space is, and then let's talk about the kind of nuts and bolts as
sure.
works later. Just the overview right now as a teaser, okay?
Sounds good. So Swag Space has been an idea I've had for the last 7-8 years. The whole industry is very broken and fragmented. And we all know this who are listening to this call, whether you're a screen printer or a promotional distributor. There's a lot of manual work, presentation decks, phone books, phone calls, closing sales, back and forth emails, a lot of different suppliers. The idea is very simple. We spent the last 8 years building the best platform for swag.com that streamlined all of the operations. What if anyone instantaneously could white label our technology and now the ultimate platform to make sales for swag? So we make the process of selling swag way, way easier. But then we take a step further. Once the orders come in the platform, it hits our backend and we become the de facto supplier. So we streamline the entire operational supply side of the business as well. So if you make the process way easier to sell and way easier to fulfill, you're removing a lot of the heavy lifting and a lot of the waste of time and energy that people typically deal with today. And you can take that time and spend more time with your family or double down and make more sales. It's completely up to you. But that's the idea, is to really streamline both the front end and the back end and make the entire experience way more simple.
And we're going to get into how that works later, right? But let's kind of connect the dots a little bit, right? So one of the things that I appreciate about you is the fact that a lot of the ideas you're working on now, it seems like the germ of the idea came from something that didn't quite work out, or an idea you had along the process. And then you go, oh yeah, that thing. Let me really kind of like expand on that a little more, right? Mm-hmm. And that seems to how you kind of grow your business and kind of morph some stuff around, right? How do you, because we all experience failure one way or the other, right? And to me, like, I really appreciate the Nelson Mandela quote, which is, I've never lost in my life. I either win or learn, right? And because of that, right, I don't have any fear, right? Like, I just do it, right? Right. Like, example, this podcast. I'm just doing a podcast. No one asked me to do a podcast. I'm just doing it, right? And here we are, right? So kind of talk about how those lessons and maybe one key thing from something that kind of led you to know that you really wanted to get into doing promo and that type of stuff. What was kind of the major impact there?
Sure thing. So my biggest failure was Vouch, that social networking app. And I spent a good 3 years on it. And for any of the entrepreneurs listening, spending 3 years on something and it not working is it's a big look in the mirror type of moment. Like, where'd you begin? Where'd you go from here? And honestly, that for me, that's what I was like, how do you not only pick yourself up and start something new, but what could I have learned from that previous failure that now I could take and make sure I don't maybe make the same mistakes? And I'll tell you the biggest mistake I made that was so clear with Vouch. I was the head of product for Vouch. I was, you know, like one of the founders, but also the head of product. And I was supposed to be designing the platform and making it a great experience. And I lost sleep every single day about every little detail. Like, what happens when you swipe your thumb this way or you go up this way? Or what's the color? What's the button going to look like? Or what are all these things? And it took us about a year to build the platform. And when we launched the platform, I realized all the things that I lost sleep over, the customers did not care about at all. And all the things that they wanted, I didn't even know about. I didn't even think about. And it was such a clear thing. I just wasted a year of my life without learning. And I launched this thing that no one really wanted. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs get in their head about how it should be. And they have this ego. They might even call it ego, but it is an ego thing. Like, it's either a fear of launching because you're afraid of what people might say, or it's an ego that you basically think that you have all the right answers, not willing to have outside opinion. And I think both for me were true. Maybe it was an ego thing. Maybe it was a, you know, fear thing. But either way, I realized I lost a full year of my life. And ultimately, if I had that year back, I could have built the right solution. I could have had the money to figure it out and pivot and do all the things you need to do to be successful. And we were basically shooting ourselves in the foot before we even started. With swag.com, I didn't wait to do anything. I had a homepage. It was a landing page that said coming soon, swag.com. And I started making sales from day one. Because I figured, number one, I wanted to be a logo hunter. I wanted to get all those, you know, amazing brand logos on the homepage, Facebook and Google and WeWork. Because if people come to my website, they're going to feel confident to use us if they see all the other big name brands using us. Right? That was number one. But also, I would be talking directly with customers from day one, and I would learn what not to do, what types of products they're looking for, how to do it with them. I mean, even just step back. I initially thought our customer at swag.com was the marketing team. Because it makes sense, right? Marketing managers have the biggest budgets. They're buying for new lead acquisition. You can have a team of 10 people, right? And they could be buying for 1,000 of their best customers, right? It's unlimited the budget that they could be spending. So that was number one. But after speaking with all these marketing managers, I realized that everyone's going after the marketing manager. Like, what's going to differentiate me, a swag.com coming soon landing page, from the 22,000 other promo distributors? Nothing. And what I noticed early on is that the office manager, no one was really appealing to them. I mean, maybe that's changed now, but this office manager was kind of like the gateway into the company. It's like the side entrance. It's a Trojan horse. And they have a much smaller budget, but they're buying for internal use. You know, the marketing teams are getting the swag that the office manager is buying from them. The sales teams are getting the swag that the office manager is buying from them. They don't have the biggest budgets, but you're basically getting your business card right in front of everybody from the get-go, and it's a lot easier to get in. So we went all in on the office managers. And I think that one key insight allowed us to be successful. Like, we could have wasted years of our time going after the wrong buyer. And we really refined it to make sure we're going after the right buyer. Now, swag.com goes after every buyer, right? We get marketing and sales and London office. But in the beginning, you really have to figure out exactly what differentiates you and how you can kind of break through the noise. All of those things are from early conversations.
So really, it's talking with your customers, actively listening, responding to their problems and developing solutions that they need is what was different between Vouch and Swagspace and what you're doing now, because you're actually actively listening to people and developing the solutions rather than, here's what I think you want and let me give it to you.
Totally. Yeah.
So that was an expensive and difficult lesson to learn, wasn't it?
Totally. I mean, it was 3 years and it was emotionally difficult. And personally, you know, when you're 30 years old and you're now have very little money in the bank account and you're coming off of a loss, it's kind of like a real big gut check of like, where'd you go from here?
So I talk with a lot of business owners, right? And one of the things I hear a lot is that they actually don't want to talk to people. Mm-hmm. They don't want to talk to customers. It's hard for them to do a cold call. It's hard for them to get them on the phone. They would rather, this is why they're all in on pay-per-click and Facebook and blah, 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 because I don't have to talk to anybody, mm-hmm. right? You see that a lot, okay? But, and what I say is that any big order that's worth anything isn't really going to be bought on a Facebook or an Instagram ad because there's no trust that's been developed yet. This is at the heart of it. This is a relationship business, right? Yeah. So for me to hand over a PO with the money for some stuff, right? I have to trust. I have to believe in you. I have to believe in your company. I have to believe that you have the technical expertise to do what I want, to deliver on time, to hit my Pantone color or whatever, right? If I have that trust, I'm all in, right? If I don't see that, then I don't have that trust. I'm not in alignment. I'm more apt, more than anything, not to buy from you. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have that conversation and talk to them about problems, their challenges, how are they using the product? That's the most important question. What are you doing and how are you using it, right? Is it for internal use or are you giving it to a customer? Those could be two different scenarios with two completely different products, mm-hmm. right? And so if you just come into it that I'm trying, you know, it's a t-shirt order or whatever, maybe a t-shirt isn't the best thing. Maybe it's something completely different that nobody's really thought of. That conversation that happens, that's where the magic is because that's where how the trust is built, right? Wouldn't you agree with that?
Totally. You know, I think especially in our industry, human connection is a really, really important thing. You know, even with swag.com, which is this automated commerce experience, we have a lot of inbound salespeople who have that human connection and are helping and crafting presentation decks and allowing, you know, really giving our insight of what's valuable, what is the right product at the right time, really helping our customers. Human connection is such an important thing. But to take a step back, even just to touch upon our thing, people don't like to be uncomfortable. I think that's the truth. Mm-hmm. Why don't they have conversations with their clients? Because it's uncomfortable for them. A lot of people don't feel comfortable selling and being out there. I was that way a long time ago. You have to get over that uncomfort. I think most periods of growth in general happen on times of uncertainty. It's like when you're uncertain about something, when you're pushing your boundaries, when you're doing something a little bit different, when you're a little bit uncomfortable, that's where real growth happens with everything. So whenever I find myself like I'm about to give a speech somewhere and I hate public speaking and I'm like, why did I sign up for this thing? What am I doing? And then I look back after, I'm like, well, this is how things are made. You have to do things that are uncomfortable to get you to a place that you want to be. So
like what you hear so far, be sure to subscribe so you can get the latest from Success Stories. And now here's Zach Shortley with the SNS Spotlight.
If your clients are looking for quality, durable bags with some style, Oakley should be your number one choice. As the exclusive supplier of Oakley bags and team gear, we're always blown away by the attention to detail they put into their backpacks and duffel bags. From the enormous heavy-duty kitchen sink backpack that comes loaded with reinforced clips, a hard-shell zipper case, roomy shoe compartment, and loads of pockets, to the stylish Oakley Street collection of messenger bags, backpacks, and duffels, you'll find something that'll appeal to every audience. These bags are sure to protect your precious tech and cleverly hold all your items you need to carry on your way to work or on your next adventure. Also, because Oakley products are especially trusted and used by athletes around the world, the brand recognition makes these bags perfect for corporate gifting. So when you're looking for a quality bag that's made to impress, check out the Oakley collection at ssactivewear.com. Thanks for listening.
So let's talk about swag.com for a minute, right? So you built that and that kind of turned into swag space that you're doing now. And I think a lot of people that are listening, they're developing and they're building their business right now. They might not want to sell it. Maybe they do. I don't know. But they still have to build their business. Mm-hmm. And whether you're selling t-shirts or you're selling plants at a nursery, it doesn't really matter. You got to build your business. You got to find your customers. You got to do all the stuff that you need to do. Right. So talk about building your company, maybe some lessons you learned. You actually got somebody to buy it. Why did you decide to sell it? And then how did that kind of morph into what you're doing now?
Sure. So swag.com, from the very beginning, we were figuring things out. I wouldn't say from the moment we launched, we were successful. That's not the case. I mean, with every entrepreneurial journey, there's ups and downs, there's side doors, it's a lot of learning and a lot of building the right solution for people. But you know, on the sales side of things, things were growing really fast. So we went from 350,000 our first year to 1 million to 3 million to 7 million to 15 million to 30 million. Like every year it was doubling. We, you know, now we have about 15,000 companies that buy from us. But we were just getting every single thing that we made in profit was getting reinvested back in technology. That was our differentiator. You know, there's everyone always puts, and I'll touch upon this in a little bit. People put like the human connection and sellers on one end of the spectrum and automation, e-commerce on the other end of the spectrum. And I would say even myself, if I'm being truly honest, like I thought when we started swag.com and we were building this automated solution, we were going to crush all the human connection sellers. That was my initial feeling. And I was wrong. About a couple of years later, I realized that the human connection aspect of the industry is always going to be there. People want to deal with people. If they didn't want to deal with them, then swag.com would be the biggest company in the world and would be doing billions of dollars worth of revenue. And people would just skip that, the human connection. There's a different type of customer that wants different things. So I noticed that. And I've always noticed that. I've been thinking about this. I've been thinking about swag space that we'll get to in a second since the very beginning, really, because I always realized there is this human connection that's not going anywhere. E-commerce automation is not going anywhere. Is there a way to really bridge the gap and bring these two things together and allow the human connection to do way more customer service and what they're really good at and what they love to do, but use technology to make their lives way, way easier? So that was just like, put down the backdrop. I was always thinking about that over the last 8 years. This is a long time coming, swag space launch. But with swag.com, we were growing tremendously. And it got to a point where there was no reason for us to sell. I mean, I think that's when most times companies get acquired, when it's not really the focus. Like me and my co-founder, Josh, we were not thinking about it. We were in the midst of COVID. And as you imagine, COVID was not great for promo companies, right? Like we went from the highs, we were growing extremely fast. COVID hits, our sales go down to like pretty much zero for what, March, April, and May, 3 months, terrifying. You know, had to cut our salaries, had to cut a lot of our employee salaries, didn't want to cut anybody. We had to keep the team together, but we were like really cutting and trying to figure out ways that we could survive it. And then this kind of like aha moment came to us and said, everybody else who we're competing against is doing the same thing. Everyone's hunkering down and trying to let this pass. And everyone's just feeling this time of uncertainty and what's going to happen to the industry. I think this is the right time to double down, to go all in, to spend more on marketing, to kind of get in front of people when no one else is getting in front of people and really trying to win this. Now, so that was one part that I think really allowed us to kind of jump out of the COVID and really expand. The other thing was, and Marshall, as I said before, it's learning from the customers. In 2017, I'll rewind 2 years because it's important. In 2017, I was in Chicago on this tech program called Techstars. And part of Techstars is they introduce you to other founders and entrepreneurs in the area. And I'm based in Chicago. And one of the last weeks I'm in Chicago, they connect me to this company, I believe it's called Jelly Vision, right? It's like a 250-person company in Chicago. And I meet with the CEO. And the CEO says, I want you to meet the office manager at our company so you could see how they buy swag. Maybe you could learn something from this office manager. And I remember going up to the second floor office. And I see about five different office managers and interns or so on the floor unboxing swag and reboxing it and writing handwritten note cards. And I was asking what they're doing. And they mentioned the term to me at the time I never heard of, account-based marketing. They were saying, we're buying swag from all these different locations. We're unboxing it. We're reboxing it. We're now going to have these kitted boxes and we're going to be sending those boxes to each individual best customer. And I never heard of account-based marketing. And I started talking to their CMO. And he was talking about how it's like the next phase. It's still very early. It's probably the first inning, second inning. But account-based marketing is this big thing. And I left that meeting being like, this is our future. This is what we should be building. Why are people buying at all these different suppliers to consolidate and rebox it? It seems like such a waste of time. What if we could allow people to buy in swag.com and with the click of a button decide to send that swag to inventory to be warehoused and then upload a CSV file and we'll handle all the distribution? Or plugging into Shopify and handling the automated distribution, or plugging into Zapier and like it just was like such a clear thing that I didn't go to that meeting. I always look back. If I didn't go to that meeting, I would have never seen the future. That makes sense. And we started spending a year and a half building this vision of swag distribution. We launched that in January of 2020, right when two months before COVID hit. The entire platform was branded as account-based marketing solution for marketing teams because that's what we thought. 2 months later, COVID hits, the world goes down. We're sitting in a bunker trying to survive this. And it was like this insight of like, we have this amazing technology that we're not using, right? Because no one needs marketing automation right now. We have the chutzpah, if you will, to go all in and push the boundaries and go against what everyone thinks. Why don't we rebrand our entire account-based marketing, our homepage, our website, our design? Like we have the tech, let's just repurpose it and make it all about engaging with your remote team while everyone's disconnected? How do you keep the company culture thriving if no one's in the office? Like, these were the things that they wanted, but we had the technology. We just didn't have the right vision and focus. And we went all in with this individual distribution, engage with your remote team. All the advertising was all about that. No one was advertising that because no one had the platform to do it. And we made this really hard pivot that was able to work. And we went from 7 million in 2019 to trending like we were doing 14 million in 2020 to be dropping down like we were going to do 6 million. And we ended the year at 15 million. So we more than doubled our 2019 in COVID, where, as you, I'm sure, know, the industry dropped tremendously during that year period. And then we kept the momentum and hit 30 million and kept growing. So I think a lot of times with entrepreneurship is there's not one way to get to the right answer. It's about being open-minded, listening, and sometimes just going on your gut and like making quick decisions.
Just being flexible.
Exactly.
So what was Jelly Roll or Jellyfish or whatever, were they your first customer with the new platform?
No, I don't think we even started marketing it in 2020.
You got the idea from
Totally.
Did you sign them up?
Yeah. We definitely signed them up as a regular customer. I don't think they were a first, but okay. I mean, during COVID,
I just want to know this is where it came from was you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I definitely told them that I've mentioned on other podcasts and other platforms that I give them the credit. It's always one of these things is like, you never know. And I always say like, why was I in Chicago during this 3 months? I left my family, I left all my friends. And you never really know where the value is at these like incubators. Like, who knows? Like, is it valuable? Is it a waste of time? And then there's always these moments of like, well, I wouldn't have ever had that idea if I didn't do this. And you kind of always look back in hindsight. It's always way clearer in hindsight than it is in the moment.
Yeah. Well, one of my business tenets that I do and have for a long time is the phrase, you must be present to win. Mm-hmm. So sitting here in my office, what am I going to learn? If I go to that trade show, if I go to that networking thing, if I do something where I don't know when it's going to be. I've been to tons of stuff that were giant losers and I wasted my time and money. And I've been to other things where it's like, it's epiphany after epiphany. Mm-hmm. And that leads to the fun stuff. Right. But you're not going to do anything with what you're doing now. If you want a different result, you got to do things differently. And the only way to find that out is to do that experience somehow and get in front of people and ask them questions. And I love that type of stuff. And I'm there's introverts and extroverts. You know, I'm an extrovert. I'll ask anybody anything. I don't care. Mm-hmm. But some people can't do that. And I recognize that. All right. So all along the way, mm-hmm. it's not the Jeremy Parker show, mm-hmm. right? You've got a team of people doing all this, right?
Totally.
You can't be a lone wolf and build stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And so talk about the importance of making the right hiring decisions. And, employees are always the true reflection of our business. So, and if you're like lots of folks, we went with this person and made a mistake and we had to pivot and mm-hmm. we found somebody else that was way better, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we know, especially these days where, everybody who has a job, who needs a job, has a job just about. How do we find the right person that's missing, right? What should we be thinking about?
Yeah, that is a great question. And hiring is very difficult. And I would say for me specifically, it was very hard in the early days. I didn't know exactly what I was looking for with swag.com hiring. And I definitely made some bad hires and not bad people, all great people, but just not the right fit for the culture, not the right fit for the time. Maybe going off more of resumes and like accolades or, shiny companies that everyone's heard of. And it gave me this confidence that they would do it. But it's a very difference. Somebody worked at Facebook and somebody's working at a 10-person startup. So like really trying to find the right balance and the skill set. In the early days, I personally also, I don't think I helped my case. I was probably more of a micromanager. That it's taken me a while to kind of move away from that. I think early days when you're the founding CEO, everything it goes back to ego. A lot of it's ego. Like you think you have the right way to do things. And when you hire people, you're kind of like over, at least for me, I was like looking over people's shoulder and maybe not being the easiest boss to work with. And I think I had to really learn how to hire people and feel confident that they're going to do the job and then step away. And for the last, I would say 4 years, I've been really, really good at that. And it got me to it. There's a period in our early days, like 3 years in or so, we had, I believe I hired four people that just weren't right. You know, just not the right people. They were, you know, having a click, if you will, in the company. And we had to, you know, we had to lay some people off. And it was probably my fault. At the end of the day, it's always the CEO's fault if you make the wrong hires. But at that moment, it's like this super realization moment. I remember looking at my co-founder, Josh, and we were thinking, like, how are we going to fix this? Like, we are down a lot of people. We need to make a pivot. We need to make a change. We need to get better, frankly, at making, like, weeding out people before we bring them into the company. And we said, forget, you know, experience, if you will. Let's really look at the people themselves and realize, like, we're such a small company. We just want to get people who are motivated, who are hardworking, who can roll up their sleeves, that if you tell them to do one thing one day and then something else the next different day, they're going to be flexible. Like, and they're going to be able to change, and they're going to want what's best for the company. And we really try to focus on people that we felt like could grow into the role. Like, they had the skill set. They didn't necessarily have the knowledge or know-how yet, but we could train them on that as long as they bring themselves to it. And for the last 4 or 5 years, we've had an amazing run. Like, we have people with us for 7, 8 years now. We have some people with us, like people don't leave at this point, which is great. And that's the kind of culture you want to build. People who are happy, who stay, who are feeling, you know, fulfilled. And it was such an amazing, it's like, honestly, I could, like, bring it back to that moment in like end of 2017, early 2018 to where we are now. It's like a whole different thing. And I think a lot of it just comes, hire people that you believe in, that you trust, and then step out of the way. Like, honestly, allow them to shine, allow them to make mistakes and figure out how to navigate it, because that's what's most important. And when they do that, they're going to start getting more confidence in themselves and that they're going to be a better employee, and they're not going to, there's going to be no resentment. They're going to feel like valued. And I think just building a culture of value and people feeling valued is really what's important. And it's a lesson I think everyone has to learn. I don't think any entrepreneur, founder, entrepreneur inherently knows that in themselves. Like, they there is some ego that comes with it. There is some, you know, but I think if you could get out of your own way and allow people to shine, that's really where you're going to see, you know, immense growth.
I love that. That's a great answer. And you talk incredibly fast. Have anybody ever told you that?
By the way, everyone says it. And I've tried to slow down and I can't. So I just keep that.
It's all good. It's all good. All right. So let's wrap up here and let's talk about your new baby, Swagspace. Sure. Right. So I think if you're in the decorated apparel industry, right, you've probably tried to sell promo. You probably have gotten confused. What is in column pricing and how do I do it? And, like, there's so many pins and what, you know, the Stanley Cup ripoffs and what's the next fidget spinner or whatever, that you don't even want to mess with it because it's so confusing. And you'd rather just do your thing, which is print shirts or embroider polos or whatever you do, right? To me, and you've given me a demo, and your thing is incredible, man. And I want you to kind of just walk people through it, why they should pay attention, why they should sign up, right? How does it work? How are you going to make them a big, huge, fat stash of cash without them really having to work hard other than getting the sale, right? You do everything. So kind of, like, give us the lay of the land, so to speak.
No problem. So I'll take you back. In 2016, when I was starting swag.com, I did everything. I call it the traditional way. You know, back and forth emails with clients, creating presentation decks manually, price quoting, going to different suppliers and wasting so much time seeing, does this supplier have inventory enough? Do they have this color? Looking at the end quantity pricing, calculating it. And then once you agree with the customer, it could take you 5 days because there's so many back and forths, to then create an invoice manually, collect the money, collect the sales tax. And that's where the real work begins. Because then you need to place the order with the different suppliers. You need to buy stuff, blank goods at one place and send it to an embroiderer and buy your notebooks here and word balls here and then manage all the different, you know, account managers and making sure things are on time. And if you have to do boxes, you have to get 3PL and consolidate. It was so much time. And I'm somebody who's obsessed with time. And I found myself spending about 20% of my time on selling and 80% of my time on the bullshit, if I'm being honest. There's, like, all this wasted time. And I was kept always thinking from 2016, what if there was a way to streamline that 80% and allow people, giving them the life back, allowing them to actually make sales and spend 100% of their time on selling or taking a vacation or hanging out with their kids or whatever they want to do, but not have to waste so much time with this back and forth. So that's kind of the high level idea. Now, how do we fix the situation? So with swag.com, we built this amazing technology. It's unbelievable. Find what you're looking for, design it, buy it in a matter of seconds, click on the button, add all the stuff to inventory, individually distribute to multiple addresses. We spent a lot of time building swag.com to give our 15,000 plus customers this awesome experience. Once we got acquired by Custom Ink, it got me thinking, why don't we take this awesome technology, literally tens of millions of dollars of technology that we've developed over the last 8 years, all the profits, as I said before, went back into technology. We have this amazing platform, 40 full-time developers developing great things and keep developing. We take this tech and we white label it for everybody and for free. So imagine your Jenny promo. They come to Swag Space. They upload the Jenny promo logo in your colors, press a button. Instantaneously, you have this amazing e-commerce experience that has Jenny promo logo with their colors, and it's really easy to check out. So first thing, Jenny promo could post this link on her homepage. Her customers could go on the site, self-serve, check out, build boxes, do everything that they could do at swag.com. Now, will they do that? Maybe there's a small percentage chance that Jenny promo's customers will actually self-serve. But realistically, what's going to happen is Jenny Promo's customers are going to go to Jenny and say, hey, Jenny, can you help me out? Because that's what they're used to. They're used to that human connection, right? We've built so many tools that allow Jenny to use technology at her advantage. So let's say Facebook goes to Jenny Promo. Jenny Promo instantaneously, in seconds, can create a presentation deck for her client, for Facebook. And we built all these different tools to create a deck. Let's say Facebook says to Jenny, I'm looking for a Moleskine notebook and this bottle and this water bottle and this tote and this mug. Jenny could build the cart as simple as the e-commerce experience, press a button and share the link with her client. Her client clicks on the link. It's like building a cart. All the products are set up in the cart and Facebook can easily check out. Once the customer checks out, Swagspace collects the full amount, including the sales tax. We remit the sales tax. We're handling it. We give Jenny Promo 30% commission on the order. So it's a large commission. It hits our backend and we start production. No more need to collect money from the client, collect sales tax, remit the sales tax, buy it from this supplier, buy it from that supplier. We become the de facto supplier. So how the system works is so simple. Have this awesome site, get orders in through a really frictionless thing, whether your customers want to do it themselves or if you want to build the carts and do all the work for your customers. Once the order comes in, we handle production, we handle operations, we handle logistics, we handle supply side, everything, basically really streamlined. Jenny Promo could go back to selling. That's the idea. And we've been having some amazing success so far. I mean, people are really diving in. We initially felt like it was going to be great for promo distributors because obviously if promo distributors are selling promo, why wouldn't they want to just make their lives a lot easier? And we think that is a good case. But the more we think about it, the more we're talking to the industry, it feels like promo adjacent even makes potentially even more sense. Screen printers, party planners, event planners, designers, anyone who could sell swag, this is instantaneously and free and allows them to make sales.
Yeah, it's the office manager.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason I like it is because I think a lot of people are used to doing what they know best, and they're not an expert on water bottles or tumblers or yoga mats or whatever. And the reason why we don't get them to have what I call the would you like fries with that strategy is because we're just not versed in that. And it's hard for us to get into it because we just don't know what we're talking about. And then when you find a resource like this, where you don't have to join an association, you can just get the tools and you could be selling. And of course, what I love about it is the technology makes you look better than maybe some technology you're already using. And of course, one of the things I think that you need to go over is you can do embroidery or screen printing or whatever, right? And you can actually send those orders to yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was one of your things I really liked.
So. Exactly. So early on, I didn't even think about it until we had these conversations. So going back to like listening to our customers, initially when we were talking to screen printers and they said, well, can I handle all the embroidery orders myself or apparel orders myself? And initially I was saying, you can do apparel your own way, but use this separate site for hard goods. So you could just disable the category. And we have that today. That's how we built it, where any screen printer could just like turn off apparel and just have a hard goods swag site, if you will, and they could do the apparel themselves. And that's working for some people. But a lot of the feedback was, it would be great if I could do everything on this site as well. So what we're doing now, and it's going to be launched in about a month and a half, is every screen printer or embroiderer could add themselves as a de facto supplier. so they can keep apparel. And if apparel orders happen on the site, it will automatically get funneled to them. And if they somebody buys a notebook or a water bottle, it gets funneled to the customing network of printers to be doing. And you can make it even more granular. Imagine like a screen printer doesn't want to take any orders under 100. So if there's an order for 25, it will go to custom ink to be printed. If it's 75 or 105, it will then go to the screen printer on record. Or they could say, let's say a screen printer only can handle, you know, up to 7-color print, but the client, you know, has a 9-color print. So if it's over 7 colors, it goes to the custom ink. If it's under 7 colors, it goes to them. So we're building it very granular. And what's cool about it is that we're learning from our clients. We're learning from our customers. We call it swag space members. We're learning from our members on what the right thing to build is. So just imagine when you sign up for this platform, this is not the end. This is the beginning. Like we want to learn from people. So we're building the right solution. It's only going to get better and better and make your life way easier.
And it's new. Like, I mean, like new, like this year new.
This is 15 days or so old.
Yeah. Did I tell you it was new? Okay. Well, great. Well, I think, is there any other thing that we need to know before we go?
No, I think I would love your audience to check us out. Swag.space. That's the URL, swag.space. There's an apply button on the top right. Please apply. We're not accepting everybody. We want to make sure we have the right people who are, frankly, very interested in growing their business and being open-minded. I think that's the biggest parameter. It doesn't matter if you do $1 million, $5 million, $10 million, $100,000, or you're just starting. That's not what's important to us of having users. It's about people who are open-minded and willing to learn something and willing to take the time and testing it out. And what's cool about the platform is there's no membership fee. If it doesn't work for you, don't use it. The whole point is that we want to make your life easier. But what I would this is what I ask your audience, Marshall. This is the big thing. In the first month, you should make a sale on the platform. That's it. Like, everyone has a customer that wants promo. Make a sale. Make one sale. It's so easy to do. Make one sale. If you don't make a sale within the first month, my belief is you will never make a sale. You just won't do it because you're going to go to the old way of doing things and you're going to forget about it and it's not going to become part of your nature. Make a sale within the first month. See how easy it is, how much your life got improved. See how much money you could actually make. And I'm telling you, you're going to be hooked and you're going to want to stay and be a really big customer.
Wow, that's a good pitch. I love it. I love it. So thanks so much for being on the show today, Jeremy. So what's the best way to connect with you if someone wants to learn more about what you do or maybe how you can help them?
Yeah, please reach out to me. My email is jeremy@swag.com. I still have the swag.com email. Reach out to me, Jeremy Parker at LinkedIn. And love to work with you guys and help out or just answer any entrepreneurial questions. You know, I always love meeting fellow entrepreneurs.
Great. All right. Well, hey, thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate you. All best wishes on this new venture. I think it's awesome.
Thank you so much. Great to have. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's our show today. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe so you can stay up to date on the latest Success Stories episodes. Have any suggestions for future guests or topics? Send them my way at Marshall@MarshallAtkinson.com, and we'll see you next time.